Trenton Bridge, Route 3. An invisible rope tied round my waist pulls me to this place of sea meeting endless shoreline, where I will one day live, or maybe just one day did. If it made any difference, I would write this poem anonymously, or make up some vague pseudonym slightly more contrary than Bird, which I sometimes go by in letter. 2. The collapse of the New England fisheries, cod, Atlantic halibut, and haddock gone the way of the great auk, depleted by the big trawlers. It is more than suburban tendrils for these Maine lobstering men and women, many who can no longer afford to live by the coast. Access to the flats for clammers and wormers, once communally accessible, now the rights to the edge of the sea are being bought by millionaires from far away cities who look at these gritty, earthy people like the white Europeans looked upon the natives 300 years ago, when arrogant biblical lies filling their heads, they fought the Wabanaki, Sacos, Kennebecs, Penobscots, sophisticated societies thousands of years old, living lives in rhythm with the Great Mother. Those who live on this land now, the ancestors of the Europeans, again fighting to be here at all, the same DNA bones as the one who felled the old trees, forced first from the rocky shores of Ireland, then from the eastern cities, these people who fought for this land, buried in thousands of small holes in old cemeteries, which scatter this landscape like spring lupines, the original white people here, who here, like everywhere, conquered in order to have. Is any land free of this horrible legacy? They fought endlessly, first against Britain, then Boston, for rocky soil where little will grow, for small boats and fierce tides. They spent their short lives battling disease and poverty. Now, no more fish to be caught. The ones still working the sea spend their days hauling traps of crawling, ground-dwelling, clawed creatures of the sea. Back-breaking, dangerous, it's a hard life wedged at the edge between the continents. Apparently, the rich folks from the cities don't understand neighbors who don't preen and party and prance about like Floridian racehorses. But whoever thought it would come to this? Me, someone who catches insects and carries them gently outside, defending people who kill other beings for food and a roof over their heads. I have always stood up for the underdog, the dog at the foot of the bed who, in my mind's eye, sits in the chair of king and queen. I should be fighting for the lobsters, have gone terribly astray in my own way. 3. It is a classic foggy Maine day. The air is thick with smoke and mist. I have been convinced to drive an hour and a half up coastal Route 1 from Cape Rocher, the outcropping of land and rocks which tugs at me, to the edge of Acadia National Park, touristy even in the fall still. We sit by an inlet, surrounded by people with New York accents. In front, they are boiling lobsters in vats of seawater, stoking the fires with wood. People stop and take pictures with digital cameras, such a bizarre contrast, technology flashing in the face of rough, slogged, smoky men working wood fires with rising salty steam seen round the bend in the road. Inside, tables of people each with a lobster on a tray, with boiled corn in tin foil, or waiting impatiently for their number to be called. 4. I am sitting inside as if caught in a fog of time and place, remembering, standing in line to take my food, all of us then, with plates in hand, walking slowly, purposeful, eyes downcast to a place at one of the tables at a silent meditation retreat. For half an hour we all sit, a room of 50 people, the only sounds, forks and spoons clicking on dishes. We are eating meditatively, straining to be focused, to be in the moment with awareness. To be in the moment when our minds drift, bring them back to sitting there in that hall, in that chair, a person on either side, to focus on the food, the scents, flavor, texture, the sensation on our tongues, the chewing, swallowing. All done in silence but for the sound of clicking, of chairs scraping, all exquisite concentration and presence. I love these meals at meditation retreat. 5. This is how I want the touristy people around me to eat a lobster. Aware these beings were alive just moments before, that the only reason they went willingly into the boiling water is because their hands, okay, claws, were tied and something much bigger than them was giving them no choice. I want these touristy people to understand that all life is precious. The lobsters, shells blackish blue 10 minutes ago, now blood red, 8 legs curled in death. I want these touristy people to know, really know, that these beautiful creatures have died for them. Not supposedly like Jesus died for them, not so they can live mindlessly, although most do. These people don't need to eat lobsters to live, but the main people need to catch and sell them, so what has evolved is a tenuous give and take of resources. I want these tourists to really know, to really understand, every being, every lobster, has a personality, a life force. Gendered and territorial, lobsters will fight like the fiercest bulls for their spaces. Some are courageous and some shy, some aggressive and some placid and solitary. Some wise, others foolhardy, each one carving its own niche in a spot down on the floor of the sea. I want these diners to know that these creatures have as much a right to live as the person on whose plate their lives have ended. That on their plate before them is a representation of a symbol of the endless litany of the powerful versus the weak, the predator and the prey, that this lobster has died for money, and some smelly, hairy, furless human woman or man's momentary, meaningless pleasure. At the table next to me, a man comments over and over again, "How sweet the meat, how sweet the meat, how sweet the meat," until I decide he has some sort of personality disorder. My lobster arrives and I take my first bite. Another man watches me out of the corner of his eye. My hands, face soon covered with the essence of this creature, like rising from the body of a lover. A Mainer, by his accent, the watcher, says forlornly to someone at another table, embarrassing to me, seemingly suddenly thrust into the spotlight, am I some sort of gastronomical role model? How he loves sticking his whole darn face into the lobster with a rueful smile, adding, my wife, in front ordering, she won't let me eat them this way. And there is no way to deny this is the most delicious animal I have ever eaten. The smell of wood smoke in its flesh, the seawater from the vats inch through the joints, and I eat with abandon and feel like how I used to feel when I threw a piece of clay on the wheel, the wet, soft, slimy, primordial clay under the direction of my hands moving from wet lump into whatever form I directed it. Like digging my hands into the soil when gardening, ending a day in the garden as happy with what I've accomplished as with black dirt under my fingernails. Eating a lobster like this is like taking the earth into my body, the spirit of life, the earth that is the source of life, the great mother, the goddess. This lobster is a cathedral upon which I worship. This sea harbors the lobster. This earth harbors the sea. And honestly, the universe is just holding the earth in its tentative claw. Will it be too late before we realize we all ride the waves in the wake of the claw's grace?